toast to those who meant the most. Ain't the same without you here, without you here.
There have been a number of overdose and suicide deaths on Tulane campus in the last year. And a lot of the discussion around what to do about this crisis has talked about Tulane University as a closed community. And as community members in New Orleans who consider students, professors, the Tulane campus a great part of New Orleans, we wanted to respond with some questions and concerns related to how students and the university have responded. So I'm here with Arielle from the New Orleans Harm Reduction Network.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Can you tell us a little bit about your experience? You went and spoke with the Students for Sensible Drug Policy
in November.
What were some of the concerns that you heard with that community?
Yeah, it's a really great dynamic group of individuals. A lot of young leaders who are just really trying to be engaged with issues around drug policy and drug use. And what was very interesting about the work that they're doing was that it concerned a lot of drug policy advocacy in different states. Like, they were describing a campaign for phone banking about marijuana decriminalization in Washington state, which, you know, is certainly, you know, a valuable effort, but doesn't have a direct link to the sort of everyday lives of Tulane students. And when I asked them about that, they started talking about what you just described, the alcohol-related deaths on campus, the incidence of alcohol poisoning, sexual assault, a lot of drug use-related concerns that they felt were not being addressed by the administration in ways that felt healing to them, mandated counseling, things like that, that sort of isolate an individual instead of having, say, a community-based, sort of self-determined space for recovery in whatever sense of, you know, that word people attach to.
I remember when I was in college, there was a group called the Community Health Initiative, and it empowered students to learn a little bit about safer drug use and how to create communities where, for example, if a group of people was going to be drinking, there would be somebody who didn't, that was there. I mean, it makes it sound unattractive to say that it would be babysitting, because sometimes it was people who were like, well, you know, today I don't want to drink. Have you heard the students, like, offering any kind of, like, support for one another, whether it means they want to abstain from drugs or use drugs in a safer way?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that what I was hearing from the Tulane students is that they wanted a little bit more support or guidance in efforts like that. But there definitely was that sort of spirit of self-empowerment. And I think that that can be actualized through efforts that you just described, where, let's say, someone's the designated driver and they trade off with their friends, you know, week to week or every other day, whatever their sort of, you know, behaviors are dictating. And that, what that does is it creates a dynamic of mutual aid in that, let's say we're going out and I say, okay, I'm going to be the sober person and make sure everybody gets home safely. And then I have that perspective of what that looks like and what needs people have, you know, whether they articulate them explicitly or not. So the next time I go out and I decide to, you know, use alcohol or whatever, I'm aware of the compassion that maybe you're extending me that night by abstaining. And so the Tulane students, I think, would really benefit from connecting more with the broader community and not be so sort of ensconced in this rarefied bubble where there's a lot of, like, tension and destructive behaviors that aren't really addressed by a two-lane capsule solution. And so I would say,
I've heard comments from parents or counselors in the two-lane community that, you know, New Orleans is a party city. Like, the campus experience, sure, it's kind of a national trend that you're seeing these alcohol and drug-related experiences on college campuses, but in particular, New Orleans is this place where there's so much, drug use, alcohol use. But as somebody from the community where, the experience is a little bit more varied than that, can you explain, some opportunities that people could have off campus that would maybe strengthen their understanding of, a safer use or reducing harms?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that that is really a pervasive narrative of what the Tulane college experience is, or at least at the undergraduate level. And I think it bears note that that sort of experience is one, I wouldn't say particular to, but certainly one held by a lot of privileged students, meaning socioeconomic background, where they're not maybe working a side job to pay for school, things like that, where there's a lot of time and there's this expectation that the college years will be this sort of free-for-all party city. Oh, Tulane, yeah, it's New Orleans, Mardi Gras, yeah, frat houses, whatever. But I think that, college is just this amazing opportunity to learn about, oneself as an individual, but then also how you can learn to be a member of a community, and whether you decide to stay in New Orleans, if you're not from here, or you are from here, you decide to move on somewhere else, you can still have roots and have attachments that grow during those years when you're sort of learning about who you are and what you care about. So in New Orleans specifically, there's a lot of artistic expression. There's a lot, athletic opportunity, but certainly people who are interested in those sorts of pursuits. As far as the partying culture is concerned, there are ways to party safely. And there are ways to party with and without drugs and alcohol. And I think that the expectation that a student will go to Tulane University and then just go and get wasted all the time, that I think is maybe not the most productive model of social engagement, although it certainly is one. And I guess more specifically, what I would say is encourage members of Tulane faculty and staff to provide just linkage to those broader sort of community-based efforts. If you want to go to a lecture, you want to go to a museum, or you want to go to a cafe where there's a play going on, or a ceramics exhibit, or whatever the student might be interested in. There are groups that have been working in this city for well before they entered, Tulane class of whatever we're up to at this point, 2019, I think. And so I would say, seek those opportunities.
So we're together today because there is an addiction counselor named Meredith who has been working with Tulane students. She also has a personal connection because she had an older brother who passed away from an overdose. And she wanted to work together with parents and students and former students to develop a proactive plan for assisting students that needed more support on campus for sober living. So this would be a sober living house.
Yeah, I think that Meredith's very brave and coming from a place of grief and loss to, to parlay that into a constructive experience for young people who maybe are struggling with some issues that she's been made familiar with. As far as the specifics of sober living, that's certainly something that's been done on other college campuses. And while I think it's very difficult to sort of empirically say if that's a successful model or not, I think that it's an interesting idea, especially at Tulane, we talked about, sort of got this reputation of a party school and a, the Big Easy. And I think that Tulane University rightly has an intention of addressing drug use on campus. I would say for this specific housing structure, it strikes me as a bit ostracizing in a way where certainly students who want a sober lifestyle or residence, you know, like I think it's important to have that, have a space that they feel is safe. But similarly, or along the same lines, creating or even enforcing a binary between sober students and non-sober students, I think might be a little bit dangerous. So for instance, if a student decides, okay, I want to live in this sober housing dorm, but then has some kind of drug use or even like a relapse or whatever that, you know, sort of represents to them or their counselor or whoever's sort of in charge of this program, what happens to that student? Are they in violation of housing policy? Are they maybe encouraged to or even almost like sentenced to additional surveillance, whether it's counseling or monitoring in some other way, drug testing? Like, how is this enforced? What is the point of hierarchizing sobriety above, for example, a harm reduction approach? Which would say, okay, well, you know, we understand people are going to be using drugs, people are going to be using alcohol. How can we all collectively be aware of the risks of that, of the risks of that use and all of its manifestations, and how do we sort of mitigate those risks? And that could be anything from saying, okay, well, you're going to go out drinking. How about you? How would you feel about drinking a glass of water alongside every alcoholic beverage you have? Or, just sort of like efforts like that versus just saying no, sort of the abstinence focus, which has pretty much not proven effective. And so I'm just concerned about the students who would live in a dorm like that, or if they're going to be made to live there, if they've been identified as so-called at risk by the university. Who's determining what that risk level is, how much of the student's input is involved in the creation of this housing initiative, returning to that idea of self-determination and, you know, young adults trying to create community that feels safe for them.
The concept of motivational interviewing has been used in harm reduction to really have an individual take the lead about where their priorities are. And for some people, sobriety is like one of the more important aspects of their mental health. But there are other issues like grief from seeing a loved one pass away or trauma from something in childhood that maybe doesn't require abstinence. But, you know, requires some extra support. So I wanted to just consider that a little bit in relation to what would be a sober living house.
Yeah, so motivational interviewing, I think, is a very useful technique, not just in a professional setting, like a therapist's office or whatever, but even just in day-to-day conversations where you're trying to maybe provide support or receive support. So an example of motivational interviewing would be asking open-ended questions. So, it doesn't even have to do with drug use or anything like that. It could be like, how would you feel about going to the movies later? Versus, do you want to go to the movies later? That would be closed, yes or no, would be the really only answers. How do you feel? Meaning check in with yourself. Like, I care about you and your emotional experience right now. And it's about the movies. It might not be, you know, life-changing, but for something like drugs, like, hey, I've noticed you've been using, you've been smoking more weed than usual. Like, how is that for you? You know, how is a great starting word for any question, because it really, it positions the asker in a caring role. Like, I care about you, like, I want to know how you're doing. So another example where motivational interviewing might be useful is saying, like, hey, like, I've noticed you're my friend, you seem kind of like down these days, like, I'm here for you if you want to talk about what's going on or if you don't want to talk about what's going on. And that way it creates this open space for the person to share what they're going through, or at least just kind of keep it in mind that they have someone who wants to be supportive of them.
Mm-hmm. If we're coming together into a communal space with a particular intention, how are we going to make a collective decision about using an alcohol product or something? Have you had any experience with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And just hearing your, just the word consent came up a lot for me as I was listening, because what that practice does, like asking, checking in with people how they feel about drug use or how they feel about being identified as a certain gender expression or another, is you're requesting the consent of those around you to participate in a given activity, and whether that activity is just chatting or it's sharing a drink or drugs or whatever it is. We don't live in a consent-based culture, and creating those spaces can sometimes feel a little bit awkward. Like, that's not common to have, like, oh, I brought beer, how does everyone feel about that? It's sort of, like, unusual. But what I think that can do is create a moment where people think, like, okay, well, I don't care if anyone's drinking around me, or, like, actually, no, like, I'm trying to be sober, and, like, my friends know this, why are they bringing beer? And it sort of gives the individual that space to be self-reflective, and if they feel empowered to do so, then communicative about what their needs are. So that can be very positive. And I think that it gives people a chance to say yes or no, or any sort of degree of agreement or disagreement in between. I think that anytime there is space for consent, like checking in with each other, that's going to be positive, and that's going to build community and build confidence in individuals. I'd say, I think, like, on a campus like Tulane, if a student, and this is, you know, a story that's been told to me by a number of students there, and former students as well, if there is a decision made to not drink for whatever, maybe Lent, maybe they just want to chill out, maybe they're studying that week, I don't know, whatever the decision is, often it's met with derision. Their friends are like, oh, what a loser, or okay, you can designate drive, which is sort of positive, but maybe not what the person really like wants from their friend circle. Might not feel like there's a balance in that relationship at that point. So I think that anytime there's an effort to make people feel validated in their decisions and supported by a group of people, that's going to be a positive effort. Thank you for having me. Love being asked for my opinion. But more than that, I really hope that members of Tulane University, whatever capacity you know, they affiliate, feel that there's room for their voices and for their input in really all spheres of university life. Housing certainly is very important to the lifestyle that's created on that campus. And I hope that the university is responsive to that input in ways that feel holistic and driven towards a sort of healing and constructive place. And I think that would be the best way to approach these issues.
Okay, well, thank you.
Yeah.
Without you here, without you here.